Good morning, everyone. I'm Naya Swami Asha, and we're continuing our sheltering in place satsangs. Let's begin with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master, Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, Divine Friend Swami Kriyananda, we ask your blessings, your guidance, your infinite love, that we may be transformed to learn whatever lessons are being sent to us, to rise from delusion into the free skies of spirit. Om. Peace. Amen. Well, everyone, this morning I've been encouraging you, if you had any questions that you wanted answered, to send them to me, and I've received a few, and I would like to sort of talk to some of them. Sometimes a question is very specific to the person, but often the answers are not. One woman wrote to me, and now this may sound a little bit extreme. She asked how to go forward in life when she feels like she's in great danger much of the time of losing her mind. Now, I know fortunately this is not a question that most people ask, but it's a dramatic question that can lead to answers that may actually be helpful to all of us. Whenever we talk in Sanatana Dharma about the force of Maya, and Maya is considered to be the mysterious magical force that prevents us from seeing reality as it actually is. It's this veil of delusion, and in the traditions of India, there's a lot of mythology built around who Maya is and how she works. And actually almost all traditional peoples have some personified force that keeps us from knowing what the right thing to do is. And when we talk about the three delusions, it's often characterized as wine. Well, sometimes they say wine, women, and gold. When Sri Yukteswar was asked why they talk about women as the temptress, why don't women as the problem, why don't they say men? It would be just as easy. Sri Yukteswar said, well, some sage must have had trouble with a girl, is how he put it. But what we're really talking about, what women represents, it represents the idea of sensuality, sexuality, the sexual impulse being such a powerful impulse, it personifies, it's a shorthand way of speaking, of everything that draws us to seek material comfort, to satisfy the body and its longings, whether it's for sleep, I forgot to say wine is what I meant to say. I did say wine. For enjoyment, for pleasure and enjoyment. Wine represents the desire to solve our problems by becoming less conscious. And that's sort of what I want to talk about for a moment here. This is the whole crux of what it means to be on the spiritual path. And in these particular days, it's a particularly interesting thing to contemplate. Swami Kriyananda created a course called Superconscious Living. He created it in the late 70s. It's a whole marvelous study and way to go and get into the spiritual path. It hasn't enjoyed the worldwide popularity that I think it will someday. But the principle of the Superconscious Living course is explained in this way, which is that we have two forces that are always working with us. One force is superconscious, and superconscious wants us to expand into our full potential of infinity. Subconscious says the known misery is sufficient. Let's not risk it. Let's just repeat what we've always done, and at least we'll know what to expect. And it wants to hold us to what we have already accomplished, and if possible, even pull us down a little bit further. Now, what we have already accomplished may be quite a lot. It's not, the subconscious is not necessarily bad. It's just simply what's already been done. If you're a very spiritual person, your subconscious may be a very positive environment, but it's not yet self-realization. If you're filled with habits that take you away from the light, then your subconscious is more of something to, may not be your friend, your spiritual friend. So the realities of consciousness are superconsciousness and subconscious. Now, and subconscious is completely subjective. We think of subconscious as being associated with sleep, because you can go to sleep, and when you can go to sleep, you can be in a whole world. You can be dreaming and having adventures with somebody who's sleeping in the next room, and you will have a great experience, but they will know nothing about it because it's completely subjective. Now, this is different than connecting on the astral plane. I'm just talking about subconscious dreams. So when we go into a sleep world, we're completely in our own world. Nobody shares it. It has aspects of objective reality, but our experience is completely subjective. When you go into mental abnormality, of what you know people would call a mental illness, you enter into a completely subjective world. Unfortunately, these days in many of our cities, we see people wandering around who are living in a completely subjective world. You know, they can be talking to entities that aren't really there. They can be paranoid about things that are happening. They can imagine themselves to be something that they are not. There was this mentally unbalanced man who sometimes would visit our church, and he was always having notebooks, and he was always working. He sort of seemed to remember himself as somebody who was very busy doing important work, but he wasn't. He was just totally confused. He was living in a subjective world. Even if we're not mentally ill or asleep, oftentimes we live in a subjective world, which is we project upon the world around us realities that are only based in our own ideas. Why did you look at me like that? You're really mad at me. No, I'm not mad at you at all. Yes, you are. I can tell that you're mad at me. You know, people are out to get me. Anything. It might not go into unbalance, but it's still very subjective. The superconscious world is where all differences actually merge. And from superconsciousness, you can understand not only your own individual reality, but you can understand the realities of everyone. You can understand the past as well as the present. You can see the future as well as the present. So we're always fighting to expand beyond what we already are to reach what our God-given potential is. The conscious mind where we live, which is wakefulness, is the battleground. And every moment of our lives, we are making choices as to whether or not we continue to be as we always have been, following habitual ways of thinking, familiar ways of thinking, finding our security by familiar methods, or are we going to open ourselves to a new possibility? Now, when life goes on as normal, so to speak, people just play out their subconscious habits. They live the life that they expected to live, that their parents expected them to live, that their incarnational habit wants them to live. And they can live and die for many incarnations that way, because nothing interrupts your ability to keep going as you've been going. This is my house. These are my habits. I have coffee in the morning. This is what my children do. This is my pattern. Now, what's happened to us now is the pattern has been completely interrupted. And it's possible that we're going to go back at some time to something that looks like what we had before. It's also quite possible that we're not going to. And we don't know this at this point. So it seems to me like what we're working with right now is a tremendous opportunity to realize that I don't have to just be who I always was. I can easily be wherever God is taking me. My friend Shivani used to make an illustration. I don't have a rubber band in my hand, or I would do it for you. Pretend I have a rubber band here. She says, here's the rubber band, and it's looped this way, and this is this. And if the rubber, if it's being tried to pull this way, if this part of it just goes along, then you have a dynamic, but you don't actually have tension because you're pulled and you move. If, however, you plant yourself and this rubber band is being stretched this direction, then it gets tenser and tenser and tenser on this. But it's not because you're being pulled in this direction. It's because we're resisting the change. That's all. It's just because we're resisting the change. And if instead of resisting it, we find it within ourselves to move toward it. Now, this is where the question of wine comes in, so to speak. Because when we're faced with difficulties in our life, what the subconscious mind wants you to do is it wants you to close your awareness down so that you don't have to experience it. And that is perfectly manifested by getting drunk, taking drugs, just watching television, just dulling our consciousness so whatever is bothering us doesn't bother us so much. The problem is, if it has an objective reality or even a subjective reality, as soon as that intoxicant wears off, nothing has changed. Now, what the spiritual path tells us is that the only way to deal with these conditions which seem to be able to take over happiness is to put them in the context of a greater reality. And that greater reality, that phrase, greater reality, is the neutral code word for God, which is to say that this whole life that we're experiencing, this whole individual life, is happening in the context of something much bigger. So think of it like this. You know, we are faced with the potential of real serious losses, you know, really serious losses of economic security, which may tumble down into losing homes and residences or not being able to live in the style that we've been accustomed to. We may be losing people that we love. Just really serious things could happen, things that are really black. The last time I spoke, I was talking about death, and I was talking about the difference between death and grief. Death is a natural, God-sent part of life. Grief is how we respond to it if we've lost someone that we love. Grief is very real and can't be just dismissed away. If your whole life pattern was built around the company of someone who is very dear to you, and that person is suddenly pulled out, you're being pulled to a huge change. And the sense of loss is natural, is how I want to put it. But what happens to us if we get too lost in the subconscious world is that whatever is dark becomes this to us. And wherever we look, all we see is this interfering dark cloud, okay? Now, that dark cloud can't merely be wished away. Oh, it's fine that I'm a widow now. Oh, it's fine that my adult child is not going to live to the age I thought he would. You know, it's not fine. It's very sad, and it's going to make us weep. But whether we say the only reality is the black spot I'm dealing with, or if we can create a reality around it so that it still is part of who and what we are, but we see it in the context of the whole. Now, when we slip into a state of madness, you know, it's when we can't deal and we just go to sleep onto this side. The only solution that really will take us through these times is to constantly practice at all times, in all situations, trying to see this from a higher perspective. And trying to realize merely because this is what I've always done doesn't mean that it's the only way to happiness, or that I can't really now become somebody else. These are very challenging times. And much is going to be determined by very small actions. You know, I haven't taught a lot about affirmations or chanting or music or so on like that. Ananda resources everywhere are everywhere doing this. I think all of us need to have, and we need to have a little toolbox right now, which is our safe place to go, our powerful place to go when we feel our mental balance beginning to slip. For many years, I had an affirmation that I used all the time, which was really my antidote to anxiety. I know God's power is limitless, and as I am made in His image, I too have the strength to overcome all obstacles. And that was to me like, I used that all the time. I used that, I would get up in the middle of the night if I was feeling anxious in the middle of the night. I would use that going out for a vigorous walk, saying it quietly under my breath if I needed to say it under my breath. You see, all we're ever experiencing is our state of mind. And our state of mind is a receiving station for thoughts that are universal. And if we find ourselves stuck on a station in which all we can see is this, by an act of deliberate will, we need to focus on something else. When I was trying to become less emotional when I was in my 20s and my 30s, I used to cry a lot more than I did later in my life. And it was suggested to me that one of the ways to stop crying is deep rhythmic breathing, which is also if you go out and take a very vigorous walk and you make yourself breathe hard, or if you run in place and make yourself breathe hard, you find that it's impossible to both cry and breathe deeply and regularly at the same time. I discovered that I could stop myself crying by a strong, deliberate effort to breathe properly, but then I had to stop myself from wanting to cry. So even though I could make it stop, I had to want to make it stop. And wanting to make it stop has to do with the thoughts that you have in your head. It cannot be overemphasized how useful small, simple replacement tactics can be. And this is where Yogananda talks so much about chanting and the power of chanting. When you add a positive affirmation to a melody, and you can listen to the recordings of the chants, you can listen to any of the kirtans that have been posted online. You can go to Radio Ananda, you can go to Crystal Clarity publications and download, and just find one or two of the chants that really speak to you. Listen, listen, listen to my heart song. I will never forget thee, I will never forsake me. Fill my body, fill my spirit, fill me with the thought of Om, with the sound of Om. Just fill my body, fill my spirit, fill me with the sound of Om. And then when you bring that thought into your mind, if you do it with great concentration, it will literally drive the other thoughts away from you. Now, the question that was asked to me was a question of an inclination to fall into actual mental imbalance. It's an inclination I can relate to. You know, all of us have patterns, because my mind tends to be very intense. I can feel from past lives that that intensity has fallen in the past into imbalance. So when somebody talks to me about mental imbalance, it doesn't frighten me, nor does it seem all that unusual to me. But the fact that I know that I have extricated myself from it, and whatever shades of that are left in me, I know that these methods work. All I can say is when we feel that way, which many of us may feel that way, not to the extent of having a total psychotic break with reality, but that the uncertainty of these times could make any thinking person rather tense. Now, Yogananda said something which is very, very interesting, which has always seemed very important to me, more than ever. We tend to think of self-transformation as this huge project. And also when I'm talking about it in terms of incarnations, when I'm talking about moving from subconscious all the way to superconscious, it really does seem like a big project. But even an incarnation is just a consecutive series of moments. And Yogananda said, take care of the minutes, he said, and incarnations will take care of themselves. That's quite a statement, isn't it? Take care of the minutes. Because in reality, all we ever have is what we're doing right now. We spend a tremendous amount of energy remembering what we did yesterday, and we spend a tremendous amount of energy anticipating what we might do tomorrow, but all of it takes place in this moment. And if this moment is out of balance, then likely the next one will be too. And then if this moment is out of balance, then the next one is going to be out of balance too. And we're sort of afraid of that whole cycle, and we don't realize how simply it could all be stopped by just tuning into the right reality now. You know, what is happening in the moment, and what can I do about it? It's really embarrassing, is the only word I can think of, to realize how much energy is expended in the moment anticipating a problem that's going to come in the future. I read something that was very interesting, which was when the Navy SEALs, the very high-level, very challenging training that men and women go through to be part of that elite corps, they have this apparently really terrible final exam where they're just put through everything you can possibly imagine. And you're allowed to quit at any moment just by walking up and ringing a bell, and then you can just drop out. And, of course, you drop out when nothing bad is happening. You drop out when you're paused between the events because of the anxious anticipation of what's coming next. So it's not, I mean, because you can't drop out in the middle of it because you're struggling for your life. But once you've saved your life and you're safely back on the beach, that's when you decide that you won't do it anymore. Now, those who pass through it successfully were also tempted to quit, but they often said, but I'm fine right now. Why would I imagine that I won't be fine later? Now, we're not in such a contrived situation. Our situation is actually in many ways worse because we really just don't know what's coming. But the only way to prepare ourselves for what's coming is in some way to find a way to bring ourselves to as close to calm center as we possibly can in this moment. And I think when we're not nervous, when we're not on the edge of tipping over, whether it be into absolute mental balance or just extreme fear or despair, search out those things that lift your spirits and bring you back to center, you know, and active things that involve breathing and speaking and words or dancing or running in place or whatever it might be, not that makes you duller, you know, but that which makes you more dynamic. Because once you find a way to keep turning ourselves back to that, I find myself, I often sing Swami's song, Cloisters, Long I've Called You, My Lord, Long I've Called You. And the more I sing that, because it's slow and we have to concentrate on it, and because each word is deeply meaningful, and it's a little bit mournful in the sense of divine mourning, divine longing. It often connects me with a moment in which I'm feeling less than ideal. But then instead of taking that anxiety and letting it just spin in subconsciousness, I try to take that anxiety and use it to call to God. Door of my heart, open wide, I keep for thee. Wilt thou come, just for once, come to me. And so tension has been diffused into a divine call to God. And if we can train ourselves that when I feel off, and you see, then it becomes the subconscious habit. The subconscious habit is, when I begin to feel anxious, I begin to call to God. And then your subconscious mind begins to help you, because the more that you're calling to God, the more you don't have time and space to be thinking about everything else that could worry us right now. You know, it's what's happening, I believe, on a very large scale. Those who are already on the spiritual path are having to get serious. And those who have not yet thought of their relationship to a greater reality, have not yet made an inner relationship with their own superconsciousness and with God, will simply be forced to do it. Because suffering is a great teacher and fear wears us out. And, you know, the only reason that Divine Mother is sending us these challenges and difficulties is because a corrective is needed. So we can either hang on and try to resist that corrective, and then there'll be even more tension as we're pulled along into it, or we can do the very best we can to lean into it. There's the story of Jesus when they came to arrest him, to take him to his crucifixion. And Judas brought the Roman cohort to the Garden of Gethsemane. And when Jesus saw the armed guard there, he knew everything that was coming. And the way the story is told is he stepped forward. Rather than stepping backward and trying to resist it, he stepped forward to meet the threat that was coming. And in the Bible it says, the force of Jesus stepping forward caused the soldiers to actually fall over backwards onto the ground. Now, that's both literal, because I actually believe it happened that way. It's also symbolic. When we don't resist, but gather up all the energy we have to go forward and meet what's coming to us, then all we have to deal with is what's coming to us. We don't also have to deal with all the energy within us pulling the opposite direction. And all that's coming to us is what's always coming to us, which is the presence of God saying, you could be more than you are. You could be happier than you are. You could be freer than you are. You could be braver and more powerful than you are. Master says that difficulties don't come to us as punishment or to break us, but to allow us to prove to ourselves that we are superconsciously powerful. Now, that's the generic thread. Whether the problem is money or health or loneliness or mental instability. But the generic thread is, if God is sending it to me, I want to step forward and meet it. And the more powerfully we can step forward to meet it, the more we can free ourselves from fear and tension, and the more the experience itself will be transformed by the inner power we bring to it. No, this is not simple. Excuse me. No, this is not easy. But yes, this is very simple. And this is what we have to, again, train our minds. Just because it's not easy doesn't mean it's not simple. And that's why these very small techniques, the right affirmations, the right prayers, the right chants, right because they resonate with me, the right breathing exercise, the right dance move, whatever it might be, that just allows me to say, if you send it to me, to God, I step out with an open heart to meet it. Let's practice together. We have lots of time to practice. Take care of the minutes, Master said, and the incarnation will take care of itself. God bless you.